Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2 of my podcast, Sociology Matters. I'm a researcher, a teacher, an advocate. My name is Marianne Paiva, and for nearly 20 years, I've been teaching sociology at the college level. I love teaching, but recently we've had to change everything we know about face-to-face teaching and go to a completely online instructional model. This episode of the podcast is geared toward one of the classes I teach, Women, Work, and Family. This week, we read chapters from the book Global Woman, edited by Barbara Ehrenreich and Arlie Russell Hochschild. We are focusing on two chapters, The Nanny Dilemma and Blow-Ups and Other Unhappy Endings. This week's video, Parents Under Pressure, focuses on the stress of single parenthood and dual working households that has led to high demand for nannies in the UK and in the US. The second video, Miracle Food Saves Lives, profiles motherhood in one of the least developed nations in the world, Niger. This video also highlights factors that might push people from some areas of the world and pull them to other areas. Now, earlier in our semester, we discussed the restructuring of the American family, which began in earnest in the 1940s during World War II. Men went off to war, women largely stayed in the U.S., and became the heads of households and primary breadwinners for millions of American families. In the past 75 years or so, we've seen more and more women enter the workforce, but there are still children at home who require care. Few men have replaced women in the home as primary caregivers, and so the modern-day nanny has become a surrogate for caregivers everywhere. Okay, so let's do a little bit of work on the films first, because those are always my favorite thing to look at. I want to look at the film Parents Under Pressure a little bit. So this first video, Parents Under Pressure, documents the struggle to work full-time, have children, and keep up with social pressures of parenting. Now, in the U.S., this is largely an upper-middle-class to middle-class problem or solution when it comes to hiring a nanny, right? In previous generations, fewer women were in the workforce, and among those who were in the workforce, many worked in child-friendly workplaces, held part-time work, or had child-friendly schedules. We've seen a shift in the family structure in America, with women entering the workforce at a higher incidence than ever before, and in jobs that are less child-friendly. As we've become a more mobile society, we've moved away from family and friends who would act as surrogate parents for working parents, which has increased the demand for professional childcare, both in the home and outside the home. The second video this week, Miracle Food Saves Lives, examines the factors that contribute to destitute poverty and thus hunger in the least developed nations in the world. In this video, Niger, a rapidly growing country in sub-Saharan Africa that suffers catastrophic drought and hunger on a cyclical pattern, is highlighted. If you haven't watched this video yet, press pause on the podcast right now. Go take 15 minutes, watch the video, and come back to me. I'll be here waiting for you. Okay, tell me, what did you see, right? Now, this is a video that's probably 10 or 12 years old, but it's a 60 minutes video, which means that it's pretty straightforward. It's got, you know, there's a problem somewhere. This is one of the things that people are doing to address the problem. And this is how things like hunger and famine and poverty are being alleviated because of that, right? But what did you really see here? Now, this is one of my favorite videos, probably. It's heartbreaking, right, on one hand. But there are some things that are really interesting about this video. Number one, when this video was made, Niger was at the lowest level of development of any nation in the world. As the narrator says, it came in dead last when we're looking at developed nations. So what does that really mean, that you're a least developed nations? Well, if you compare that to some of the most developed nations, like the United States, many European countries, we see that the real difference is a difference in the infrastructure of the country. This is a common scenario in the least developed nations and regions in the world. There is a significant lack of infrastructure, right? There's no amenities or very few amenities, such as roads, airports, clean water, land that is good for farming. And so this creates this continuous loop of inadequate nutrition, inadequate access to healthcare, inadequate access to education, higher birth rates, higher death rates, low life expectancy in these least developed nations and regions. Okay, so tell me, what did you see and what did you hear in this video? Think about this, right? We saw destitute famine. We saw an extremely rural, isolated area where the just before the harvest season is when we see the highest amount of famine. We see drought that's happening. We see women who are the primary caregivers, who oftentimes give birth to 7 or 8 children throughout their lifetime. That's the average fertility rate. And fertility, by the way, is the average number of babies a woman will have throughout her lifetime. And so let's put it this way. If you have a fertility rate of a population of people, you'll see, and you say you have a fertility rate of 5 babies on average per woman in the population, and you have 100 women, right, from this population, on average, those 100 women with a fertility rate of 5 will produce 500 children, right? 100 times 5 equals 500. Compare that to a fertility rate of less than 2, let's say 1.5. So you take those same 100 women, except now they are in the most developed nations with the lowest levels of fertility. And you take those 100 women, you on average, they have 1.5 babies, and you're going to get 150 babies from those 100 women, right? So you see this difference. So you have this very high birth rate that is an average across the nation or the population. And so so in these countries, you see a really high birth rate usually. Usually the less developed a nation is, the higher the fertility rate is. Also, the higher the death rates are because of a lack of infrastructure and lower life expectancy. We see this over and over and over again. And so because of a lack of infrastructure, there is a sense of desperation, a sense of hopelessness, because no matter how hard you work in a nation or a region that has very little infrastructure, you really can't get ahead. You can't pull yourself up by the bootstraps, as they say. And so you get famine, desperation, hopelessness, helplessness. Couple that with an area that is not arable or not being able to farm on, and you get this just continuous loop of complete destitution in the population, right? And so this is one of those really interesting things that we see in videos. And this is why, you know, this is why I wanted you to see this video, because I often hear this question from people. I hear it probably once or twice a week when people say things like, why would someone ever try to move from one place to another if they weren't sure they would be able to have a job, if they weren't sure, right? Why would they move? Why would they try to move? Particularly, why would they try to move to a place illegally or without documentation? And this video, Miracle Food Saves Lives, really highlights that complete destitution that a population can have that forces them or pushes them out of their country or region into other countries. Imagine if you're a mother, if you're that mother that we saw in that video, where we see that she's had 5 children, multiple children have died before the age of 5, she cannot produce enough milk because she does not have enough nutrition, because there's not arable land, they're in a drought. There's not infrastructure like social networks or social services to help people. And so she becomes destitute and she becomes desperate in order to do something to help her children and to help herself. And so this is that point where a region, right, we call it in demography or the study of populations of people, we call that a push factor, right? What is the push factor that is pushing a population from one area to the next? And so, right, we see these push factors. Oftentimes we see war, we see political unrest, we see famine, environmental destruction, and lack of employment opportunities and lack of education opportunities that would push people to the point of destitution that they would try anything they could to leave one area and go find opportunity, right, or in another area. And what we see is this is a symbiotic relationship. These two things work together in migration, where we see that one nation is, or one region is suffering from some sort of catastrophe, whether it's long-term or short-term, that work as push factors. And then another area works as pull factors. There might be promises of work in those regions where there are, where people are pulled to. There, you know, it's promise of work that is possibly relatively low skilled labor opportunities. And we see that because of a lack of education in the least developed nations, there's often only low skilled workers. And so pull factors are like this promise of work, relatively low-skilled labor opportunities, educational opportunities, or following loved ones, right? These are these pull factors to these other areas. So these two videos together really demonstrate this push and pull effect, where you've got parents under pressure, right, in this documentary, that are in need of low-skilled workers. And so, right, we have more women entering the workforce in the most developed nations. They're going off to work. Someone still needs to take care of their children. And so, they are demanding, right, someone to take care of their children, and preferably do that in their house. And so they're asking for domestic workers. There's a demand there. And then in the second video, we see some of the push factors from areas that might, when we say, okay, I need a place to go, I need somewhere, I will do anything to help my children, where will I go? Well, I hear about this place that might have these opportunities, and so I'm pushed from my region to, and pulled to another region, right? So when we see this, right, we have to ask this question. This is the question, really. Why are so many nannies and other domestic workers in the most developed nations from the least developed nations? Well, because largely the least developed nations are pushing people out, right, because of a lack of opportunities and infrastructure, and the most developed nations are pulling workers to them with promises of work, education, and possibly being near their family members, right? So this push and pull factor in demographics is incredibly, incredibly important. One of the most at-risk groups of domestic workers are undocumented workers. Nationally, about 5% of the U.S. workforce were identified as undocumented, without legal authority to work in the U.S. Meanwhile, 36% of domestic workers in the U.S. were undocumented. What happens when the domestic worker doesn't quite fit in with the family dynamic, or questions work conditions, or doesn't perform exactly as the employer wants? In the article, The Nanny Dilemma, the author describes the life of a modern-day nanny whose day often begins before the sun rises and lasts well into the evening. Nannies often hop from family to family as children age and go off to school, which creates an inherently unstable career. Although there are perils of the nanny life, long hours, being asked to complete tasks that are not in the job description, potential personality conflicts with their employers, One of the hardest aspects of nannying is bonding with children and then leaving the family when the children go off to school. But also, what happens when the dream life in America turns sour? Blow-ups and Other Unhappy Endings discusses the precarious nature of domestic workers who live or work extended hours in a private home, either caring for children or working as housekeepers. Domestic workers often navigate a fine line where they rely on their employment for housing and sometimes to maintain a work visa to remain in the U.S. How does this affect the working environment of the employee? Imagine if you lived in a different country, did not fully understand employment laws, and relied on your employer for your basic needs. Would you work more than you otherwise would in order to please your employer? Would you know your rights, particularly if the country you lived in had a different primary language than what your primary language is? How would your life be different if you relied on your employer for absolutely everything? The potential abuses that domestic workers face are often catastrophic. Why are domestic workers more at risk than others of abuse, being underpaid, having no health insurance or common employment protections? And why are undocumented domestic workers even more at risk? Simply, it's the nature of the work. Domestic workers are more likely to work under the table or without reporting the work to legal authorities or claim the employment as income. Additionally, domestic workers work inside the private homes of other people, who are not subject to the same public visibility as coffee shops, factories, grocery stores, or schools. What happens in a private home, as the saying goes, stays in the private home. Abuse can be hidden, hours can be stretched, given the often casual atmosphere of the workplace, and pay is less regulated than at other workplaces. There are usually no co-workers at a private home, no customers with watchful eyes, and no government agency inspecting the workplace. So financial and sometimes physical abuse can happen for months and years. We often criticize the immigrant worker who leaves their home country to seek work in the U.S., but much of our economy relies on relatively cheap, disposable labor to allow American workers to stay in the workforce and higher-paying jobs in the U.S., while someone else takes care of their children. And we often do not understand the push factors, the desperation, the poverty that pushes workers to the promised land of the U.S., either documented or undocumented. It is that same desperation that persuades domestic workers, particularly undocumented workers, to stay in potentially abusive workplaces. Most domestic workplaces are not abusive, but the potential for abuse and mistreatment are greater for domestic workers than in most other occupations in the U.S. I hope you enjoyed the videos this week and the readings from Global Woman, and I hope that you were able to see a little bit different perspective on the push and pull factors of different countries and the workplace environment of domestic workers. That's it for this episode. Find me on Facebook, on Twitter at MC Paiva, or on the web at www.mariannepaiva.com. I'm Marianne Paiva. Until next time, stay safe, take care of yourself, be well, and remember, sociology matters.